Welcome to Caribbean Mystics Podcast,
where we marry mysticism, superstition, and lore. I'm your host, Paulina.
And I'm your host, Gabrielle. And we are your resident Caribbean mystics.
Join us today as we explore the depths of real supernatural stories.
Told by real people located right in our very own backyard.
Teresa and her 10-month-old son are on the way home from the beach when she suddenly experiences a flat tire, leaving them both stranded as night quickly creeps in. In a twist of fate, a mysterious car approaches their vehicle, and the outcome changes their destinies forever.
My memory of what I'm about to share happened on the island, and this was just post Hurricane Marilyn. This was late October into early November of 1995. Many listeners will recall the destruction and the devastation. My job was, it was flattened, it was gone. Everything was destroyed around me, but what I did have was the beach. The beach were cleared. We were able to visit, we were able to swim after the storm. And I remember that being the only leisure at that point. I knew that I was planning to leave the island soon. I was dead set on at least trying to visit every single beach before I left the island. That week in particular, I had gotten so many flat tires and I was staying with my mom because my apartment, everything was gone. I remember her complaining about how many flats I had needed help with getting these repairs. And so she had paid for 3 flats that week. And she said, you keep going to these different beaches and you keep getting stuck. I ended up moving to the state of Maryland after the hurricane. So this final week, I was just going beach to beach. And on this particular day, I ended up staying out a little bit later than I should have. It was getting late and I remember wanting to stay out as long as I could because going home, you're going home to no electricity and there was nothing to do. It was getting close about 7:30, 8 o'clock and I said, okay, I better make a move. A lot of the roads were still in disrepair. Everything was, I mean, it was like a war zone, shrapnel everywhere and there was a lot of metal on the ground. My son at the time was 10 months old. And we were driving, he was asleep in the back seat. And I remember coming up to passing Lime Tree and there's a very steep hill. I got up to that part and my car started making a very familiar noise. And I thought, yep, I have another flat. I pulled over to the side and there's no light. There's no street lights, there's nothing. And I am trying not to panic, but I'm thinking, well, maybe if I get out of the car, sit on the hood, maybe I'll attract attention. Grab my towel and I sat on the front hood of the car, hoping to flag someone down. Sat there for about a good solid hour. And then the panic started to set in because I didn't have a cell phone. And it was getting late. It was like 9:30 and there were no cars. There was nothing. I just started to call out and I was like, God, how am I going to get this baby home? I'm in a jam at this point. So I'm sitting there and one car started coming in my direction. I saw the lights very clearly and I was like, wow, this might be help. The lights were getting closer and closer. And I noticed that this vehicle, grayish to a dark colored Jeep, it had 2 occupants and they slowed down, pulled up right next to me. And it was a Caucasian driver and a Caucasian woman, long blonde hair, very well put together. Makeup was on point. Her hair was just flowing. It was blonde. It was very shiny. They're very well dressed. And it caught me off guard because where are you going in? She had a glittered gown and he had what looked like a tux. He puts his window down and he said,
jump in. I'll get you home.
And I thought, okay, this is where I'm going to die. This is where they're going to traffic me. They're going to steal my child. I just kept thinking, you know, what if this is the only hope for tonight? I better do this. And they saw the hesitation, and she leaned forward and she said,
"It's okay. We're going to get you home."
And I said, okay. So I jumped off the hood of the car, and I kept thinking, should I do this, or is this going to be the end of me and this baby? So I lean in the car, and as I'm leaning in, he says,
"No need to worry. I'm here to help. I'll get you and your baby home."
Now, my car was tinted very dark, and my son was in the backseat. There's no way anyone can see that there is somebody in the backseat. I pulled the seat forward, and I took the car seat out. He was just starting to wake up. I grabbed the diaper bag. I shut the door, and I thought, this is it. I'm sitting in the backseat, and I'm thinking, what is this? I remember the air conditioning in the car being so cold. And I'm like, where are they coming from or where are they going? Because nothing is open. We're in post-hurricane. And she's smiling. She's looking at the driver. He's smiling in the rear view, and he's looking at me. And they were very attractive people. They were not natives. But they just looked like they were wealthy. They looked like they were... They just looked like... Like they were other beings. At that time, I had no idea what meditation was. I didn't know what, you know, non-human beings were. But I just knew then that I felt like these people were not from the same place as me. And so I started studying them. We're coming down this turn, and I remember thinking, well, how does he know to go this direction? Because no one's asked me where I live, but they kept saying they knew that they were going to take me home. So we're coming down. And I said, you need to bear left. And he looked in the rear view and he said,
I know.
And I thought, well, how do you know? So now I'm looking at her and she is turned and facing me now. And she said,
we got it. We're going to take good care of you.
And then I started paying attention to her skin. She looked Caucasian, but her skin looked like sparkles. It was almost like holographic. It was very odd. And I thought, yep, I'm losing it at this point because now I'm seeing things. But... very beautiful in presentation. So we're driving and I'm looking at them and I'm like, yeah, this is, they're getting ready to kill me. So we're just coming into town and I said, you know, when you get into this area now, you need to just go straight. And I live all the way past the airport. And he kept saying,
you know, you don't have to tell me anymore. I know where we're going.
And I'm looking like, okay, so how do you know? Once we start passing the runway, I'm like, okay, you can make a right turn here, or you could go further down. And he just kept saying,
relax, sit back and enjoy the ride.
Bye, we got you. We're going to take care of you. And I just sat back. I was like, well, okay, well then, since you know, so let's see how much you do know. And we're going, and I'm like, I'm not saying anything else. And damned if he didn't know exactly where to go. He made several right turns, several lefts, and boom, we got to my street. And I'm like, this is the test. And he pulls up in front of my gate and stops. He looks at me and the woman, I assumed, they look like they could have been married. She turns and she says,
right house?
And I said, yes. So I jump out, I grab the baby seat, I grab the bag, and my mom is at the gate. And she whispered to me and she said, where you find these white people? Where you find these white people that's out at night? And I said, I don't know. They just pulled up. And she said, you know you're in trouble. So I said, do you have at least $20? And she said, here. And she had her little purse. And it was almost like she knew that she was going to be giving me cab fare. And she said, just give them this. I turn around and they had already started up the hill. This is a one-way street. The trees that were down and everything in the storm, there's nowhere for cars to turn around. There's no wiggle room. And so they go up the hill. And so I go running up the hill. It's still in a bathing suit. I'm barefooted. And my neighbor, she's overlooking her porch. And she said, girl, where you going with no clothes on? And I said, I'm just coming from the beach. I said, that Jeep that went up the hill, do you know where they turned? No cars can't come up this hill. you know better than that. But no, it's a grayish black Jeep and it has a white man and a white woman. They went up the hill. Go to your house and put on some clothes. And I said, seriously? And she said, no, there's no cars. No cars can come up. And since the storm, no one is even parking up here. So I come back down. My mom is now back to the porch with the baby. And she said, did you give those people that money? And I said, I can't find them. And she said, okay, now this is too much for me. I'm too old for this type of drama, right? You know, you should know better having this child out at this time of the night. And she's scolding me. And just then, a tow truck is now coming up the hill. And my car is on the lift. I run on. She said, oh my God, Jesus Christ, now you're giving me another bill. So I run out to the tow truck driver and I said, hey, how much is the tow? And he said, oh no, it's already paid. It's done covered. So I said, okay, well, who's the people who paid for the tow? And he just kind of like shrugged it off. Like, I'm very busy. Here's your car. Here's your key. It's already paid. And my car was dropped down and he turned and he left. My mom and I were just sitting on the porch, scratching our heads. And she said, you know what that was? That's God. God sent you a guardian angel because you made stupid decisions that you should be thankful. She just kind of tossed it to the side. But for the rest of my life, I have been unpacking this event. I just feel like there's something so mystical, not just around that, but with my son, because my son now, that baby, he has cheated death, and there's been other events that have happened. I talk about it a lot to people who are close to me, and they're like, who do you think they were? Were those guardians? Who were they? And now, doing the work that I do, I chalk it up as, I don't know that they were my guardian angels, but I just feel like they were my personal guides, and they met me at a time of need, because had they not, anything that would have happened that night would have changed the trajectory of where I was supposed to be in life.
Hi guys, welcome back. We are officially on episode 5, which is very crazy because that just means that we are literally halfway through season 1.
Yes. I can't believe it either.
So blown away that we actually like brought this into fruition, because it literally was just the beginnings of this was a conversation, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's really nice to see that we've been able to bring it around full circle. And the comments every single week, the comments, the text messages, the reviews on Apple reviews are so encouraging, and they just fuel like our desire to keep doing this, and that we are onto something great. And so I just, you know, like from the bottom of our hearts, we are so freaking grateful for all of the support.
Totally. I mean, we get it from everything you said, even emails, social media, comments, reviews. The reviews are fire, by the way. Please keep them coming if you enjoy the show, because like Gabby was saying, it means so much to us, but it also helps us show up and just create a fuller and better podcast for you guys. We want to create a great quality product and just experience. So much thanks. It's been a journey for us, a learning process as well. So I think we're only going to get better from here.
I completely agree. And we want to be here for a long time. So we have a lot of fascinating things planned, and we plan to make this bigger and better. And hopefully one day when we have a production team, we will be able to do some kind of visual to attach to the podcast, because that's been my feedback that I've gotten. It's just like, we wish that we could see you guys. And I'm just like, excellent idea. And then I also think about all of the like planning that's gonna have to go into that, and it can happen, and we expect big things in the future.
You know, we should. You. We should season 2. We should start showing our faces, at least for this portion. But remember, I asked you that for the first time we said, I was like, should we record our video too? And you're like,
no. It stresses me out, man. You know what? It's because somebody one time told me that I have a crooked lip.
And so such a weirdness.
Like, I know. Someone was like, yeah, the way that your lip is set on your face is crooked. And so I'm just kind of like, I don't want people to be looking at my crooked lip.
That's messed up.
In our audio, in our visual. But anyway, I will try to get over.
We might as well call this the Crooked Lip Podcast because I got a crooked lip too. My whole jaw is.
Oh my gosh.
It is. Look. See? I go off to the side.
Oh my gosh.
I literally need dental work to fix that, but I'm just like, fuck it, because sorry yeah. for the F word. This is my freaking face, and y'all don't have to look at it. And if you appreciate it, thank you, because I like my face, and I like Gabby's face too. So
thank you. That, I appreciate Hayden. That.
Yeah.
Once I overcome the crooked lip fare, we can absolutely take this to a visual option.
But actually, bringing it back around, I would love to get an animator to animate our stories on YouTube because I think that would be so dope.
Absolutely. And with that being said, because I'm sure that costs money, Paulina and I make $0 and 0 cents. To make this podcast. So if anybody wants to donate, you like what you see here, you are just like, I want these young gal to continue what they're doing. This is fabulous. You can also reach out to us with a donation so we can pay said automator.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll set something up. We're here.
Our passion pays our bills.
Yes. But for real, we really enjoy doing this. It's never been about the money for us.
Absolutely.
But it does help. It does help bring a better quality, you know, just to buy some better mic equipment and just, you know.
To travel. Yeah. To travel to different islands and, you know, it just helps with overall expenses.
Yeah. So I know we had a bit of an intro there, but I think it was kind of needed. And
yeah, I agree.
And we just want to acknowledge you guys as well that we're listening and we're reading and we see you. So thank you.
Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Yes. Our deep, dark, creepy hearts.
Okay, let's get into Teresa's episode.
Oh my gosh. This is my favorite episode of the season. Because it's not like, I don't know, you hear it on like ABC News or something like, this woman was saved by mysterious strangers. And I really enjoyed it. It was a good story, like of the light and not of something of the dark or negative, you know?
I completely agree. And I feel like this particular episode is near and dear to my heart because I feel like slowly it is my hope that you and I in these stories and in our discussion are slowly reshaping the way that we perceive supernatural and paranormal encounters. Mm-hmm. And this is a story in which, you know, there's a bit of miracle there and there's a bit of God. You know, I feel like, I mean, God is present in all of our episodes, I feel, but there is a energy of like, in every moment, like you are divinely guided and divinely protected. And we'll get to it at the end of the episode. But like in my conversation with Teresa, when we were deciding if this was a story that we could fit into the scope of our podcast, she spoke about how this particular event shaped the way that the rest of her life unfolded. And so we'll get more into that later on, but the story is incredible in a variety of ways. Yeah.
Thank you, Teresa, and thank you, Gabby. You got this story down. So yeah, this is we switch on and off. We'll show each other stories that we've received or hunted down, and this was such a great find.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you, cousin Teresa, who reached out to me. Yes. Didn't know me from no place. We just knew we was related and was so willing to share this story. I am so, so grateful.
She was a pleasure. She was such a sweet person, such a sweet soul, and so smart.
And an excellent storyteller.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So let's dive into the first thing. Hurricane Marilyn. I know you want to touch on that a bit.
Yeah.
Kind of tell our viewers, listeners, sorry, what that was.
You really pushing this viewing thing, Miss Anna.
Our listeners. Sorry.
That's a little bit of a foreboding slip.
Whoops.
Okay. All right. So I feel like it's important that we go into the Hurricane Marilyn, because it's become very evident that we have viewership from all over the world. And there are some people who have never experienced a hurricane. And so I think that this lends itself to people understanding how truly like miraculous this story is. Hurricane Marilyn was a Category 2 hurricane that turned Category 3 over the island of St. Thomas. It came September 15th into the 16th. So it became stationary just about over the island of St. Thomas. And so it stayed there from afternoon into nighttime. And so it is my understanding that hurricanes that occur in the night tend to be more destructive and tend to cause more loss of life, because you don't know what's happening until shit's literally hitting the fan. You know, it's not like you go look outside and see like, oh, you know, things looks like it's really like gearing up. You just kind of have to go with your senses of hearing. And also, I guess, your own intuition to kind of feel like, okay, something feels like it's about to kick off. So Hurricane Marilyn was one of the most destructive hurricanes that had occurred, specifically on the island of St. Thomas and St. John. St. Croix did receive some damage. 30% of the homes in St. Croix experienced some kind of damage, but in St. Thomas, it was 80% of the homes and buildings were destroyed. I think part of what makes St. Thomas susceptible to this type of damage is when hurricanes are passing, they have wind speeds. So when the National Hurricane Center is just like, oh yeah, like, you know, 130 mile per hour winds, that's at surface level. And so because St. Thomas is mountainous, the more the wind goes up the mountain, the faster it gets. And so people who are at water level are experiencing 130 mile per hour winds, but people who are, you know, at the very top of the mountains, which there's a large population of people that do live on the mountains, are experiencing 150 to 160 mile per hours. So to say that St. Thomas was devastated is an understatement. The amount of poles, electricity poles that had dropped and lines all over the road, and people lost their entire roofs while they were inside these homes, you know, like people were hiding in bathtubs, people were locking themselves in showers, and it, you know, it really changed the shape of our island and our people. 10,000 people were left homeless. People were without electricity for about 6 months or longer. There are pockets that were there for almost a year without power because things were so devastated. And so part of the reason why this is so important is because when Teresa is talking in her story about how there was literally nothing to do, and so she was here beach hopping, like, mama is absolutely right. There was nothing to do. There is nothing open. The movie theater is closed. The mall is closed. Most convenience stores, if they are providing like food and stuff, are open, but like there is no activity happening. Like nobody ain't having a gala.
No, you know? Especially that. It's such a weird feeling, but the aftermath, I feel, is the worst, at least if you're on an island. I went through this hurricane too. I was really young at the time, but I remember it. And when you said it happened at night, that struck like a memory for me, because I remember looking out the window and I remember seeing the glass wobbling in and out, like the glass was breathing. And I was like, that thing is about to shatter any minute. We couldn't go home because our road was blocked by debris and large trees that fell over. There was no power, and you'd have to do things like, you know, when you flush, you got to save a bowl of water, when you brush your teeth, you know, things that we take for granted today. And I remember we woke up in the morning, we went outside, and there was not a single leaf on a tree. The island was dead. It was very depressing. And I remember seeing 40-foot boats, sailboats, on the road. On the bottom of one of those boats was spray painted, "Kids, we're okay. Love mom and dad." And that had such an impression on me as a child. Can you imagine being a parent, and especially like Teresa, you have a 10-month-old and your home is gone. So after such a devastation like this, there is nobody in a perfectly brand new car dressed to the nines going to a goddamn presidential party. So it's really freaky that this scenario happened.
Everyone that I know who's experienced Hurricane Marilyn and were at an age where they could like actually integrate what was they were experiencing. It feels like it costed a lot of people a lot of material things, but also a lot of mental things. Like, people in the Caribbean can relate to the fact that every time there's some destructive hurricane, there's usually a very mass exodus of people that are leaving the island. And so it seems like Teresa was a part of that mass exodus that left after Hurricane Marilyn. Because at this point, when you lose everything, it's kind of one of those things where it's just like, does it make sense to rebuild? Or maybe I should just move someplace where I don't have to deal with this caliber of natural disaster, you know? Like, and some people are so shrouded in like depression after, like, it really does weigh on your mental health, that for some people it's easier to leave versus driving around and passing a devastation every day.
Yeah. And it's like the world is on pause. There's no schools, there's no work. It's like post-apocalyptic almost. Like, everything is stopped. Oh, yeah. Time.
And I think part of her survival was in visiting those beaches by day, because it's just like when there's nothing to do, all you have is the memory of what has just happened and the fear about what's coming, like the unknown of like, what does life look like now that, you know, you've lost all of these things and now that people around you have died and there's so much. And so her going to the different beaches, you know, like, I think people listening to the story may be like, oh, that doesn't sound very responsible, but it's just like, unless you have experienced it, that type of trauma and sitting in the literal destruction around you, you know, we're living on an island. You can't just drive to the next state, you know, until things start to get normal again, you know, like you're kind of here.
There's no power and no phones and no iPads. Correct. And no, you have no form of entertainment.
It makes perfect sense to me that Teresa decided to use her time to go to the beach. And also, like, because of all the debris in the road, it also makes sense that she was getting these regular flat tires because, you know, there's nails all over the road from where galvanized was ripped off and wood. And there's a lot that could go wrong with your car during this time.
Absolutely.
And I can't imagine her fear of waiting there. You know, like, when I was listening to the story, I was like, damn, you had to experience some real fear.
Same.
And uncertainty to have jumped into the car with these random strangers with your 10-month-old baby. But it's just like, she's right. Desperate. Like, what were her options?
Yeah, like,
she was there an hour.
We're just going to give you an idea of where she is on island. She's stuck at Lime Tree and she lives by the airport, which is roughly around 10 miles, I would say, more or less, maybe more, to her home with a baby. What would you do? I feel like I would take that risk as well. But can we just talk about the people that pull up? Like,
oh gosh, who these white people is, where they go in at this time of night in this devastation. Like, we're in a devastation.
Yeah.
Where we go in a dressed tux? To the nines. Face beat to the gods, like, just, you know, where you going and what you glitter doing. Gown. And also, I think, yeah, correct. I think what also adds to the very creepy factor is they seem to know a lot of information about Teresa, although, like, she never divulged any of it. Like, the man knew that she had a baby in the car. The man knew exactly where she lived. Yes. And they, you know, were hell-bent on giving her a ride.
Oh, my God. Even at the end, the tow truck showing up. Had the tow truck know where to go? Like, how did they pay for the tow truck? Like, this was all premeditated. And it, you know, I try to go to the logic and the skeptical side. It's like, well, maybe that's, they were just tourists, you know? Maybe they were some rich people on island that had the privilege of a generator and they had some, I don't know, some weird ass underground swinger party that we don't know about. I don't know. And they were on their way. But then it's like, oh.
You know, that seems plausible, actually.
Right?
An underground swinger party, that actually sounds like it might be a
thing. Like, the super rich, you know? And But then it doesn't explain how he knew where she lived. It doesn't explain how he knew about the baby. It also doesn't explain the tow truck and how they paid for it already. Like, there's still so many questions. And
yeah, or where the car went after, yes, like after it drove into the dead end, too. You know, like where did it go and why did nobody else see the car outside of her and her mother? So I think a big part of the reason why we're going through all of this is because we're setting the stage to let you guys know that we don't have any logical explanations. So we're jumping right into the magic, yes, with our theories.
Yeah. So going into that, why don't you tell us first what you think is going on here?
Wait, do you have any logic?
I do.
Because I think we should hit
okay, the logic first.
Hit the people down with the logic, and then we can, and then I'll go with the magic.
So the logic is really hard for me because I'm not going to lie, as like skeptical as I can be and logical with things, I was like, aliens, the goddamn Pleiadians, you know? Because they're perfect. They got these Nordic features. They're like these strange supermodels that came out of nowhere. And Pleiadians, as far as you read, like from people's, what they say, is that their said purpose is to help the human race grow spiritually. And if that's assisting people in a dire need, why not? You know, that they usually work in the shadows, but in this case, plain sight. Anyways, I was like, all right, that's just too much to go into. Let's try to stick with what are some solid reasons. So I kind of dived into one of her observations, which was the sparkly skin. First factor is she could be wearing some body makeup, some kind of beauty product, some kind of shimmer lotion. But knowing that Teresa is a woman herself who I'm sure is well-versed with makeup, I'm sure she would have known the difference between, like, she's just wearing some shimmer lotion. This is something that really took to her, that she noticed, like, I'm seeing things. So it must have been something a bit more prominent. So I started looking into skin diseases. And mind you, it got me very paranoid about, like, skin cancer and all these different types of diseases, researching this rabbit hole. So the first one that came...
Google always prescribes death, Madonna. Google be having people just completely
worried. Dude, I'm like, I need to go to a dermatologist because there's all sorts of weird things. Like, one weird rare condition I found was something called chromhidrosis. Okay, it doesn't have anything to do with sparkly skin, but it's a rare condition characterized by secretion of colored sweat. So people can actually sweat blue and black, red, like colors, but not on track with the sparkly skin. So then I came across another rare skin condition called argyria. It's extremely rare, but it's caused by an overexposure of silver or silver compounds. Essentially turns your skin kind of like this bluish tone, not metallic or beautiful in presentation by any means. So I'm like, that really doesn't sound like this. Going into that, I came across the people that had this really rare blood disorder called methemoglobinemia. Okay. It was a whole family that was isolated in the Appalachian Mountains. They went by the name the Fugate family. And you can Google this yourself. This is real. They had generations of people that had blue skin. Today, they've intermingled with other people. So I don't think the blue gene stuck with the family. And then the final thing I found was something called calcinosis cutis. And this is the accumulation of calcium salt crystals in your skin. So I'm thinking like, okay, maybe she had like crystallized skin. This was just a buildup of salt that kind of created this effect reflecting off the light. But when I saw pictures of that condition, it was literal calcium deposits that were hard and they were like bumps that don't dissolve. They were like under the skin and it was not beautiful at all. And it was not sparkly and shiny either. So the reason I'm naming all of these rare blood disorders and skin diseases and conditions is because maybe this is something like we haven't seen yet. That could be a rare condition that this woman had. Honestly, that is as much logic as I can get with this.
The woman and the man had the skin disease, the same one?
Well, she didn't really say the man did, but after the skin disease thing, I came across a few blogs and a read on Gaia. And this goes more into the spiritual side. It's a spiritual transformation where people try to awaken the light body, what they call the light body. And put simply, it's pretty much like a vehicle to graduate from the human condition to return to source. So achieving the light body, you're able to move from three-dimensional carbon-based biological body to a multidimensional rainbow bodies, and which could create feats as like levitation, telekinesis, these healing hands, these powers that you hear of ascended masters that acquire. And so they say that a lot of these teachings were specially designed in like mystery schools back in ancient times to select few people. And a symptom of achieving this ascension is sparkly skin. This one woman on her blog, and I'll put it in the show notes, she has a picture of her skin, and it looks like what Teresa's describing, like almost like holographic, iridescent, glittery sparkle. And she claims that this is because she's awakening the light body. And
that's really interesting.
Yeah. So this is, I'm going on quite a rant right now, but it led me to human energy fields. And I'm like, all right, is this like a real thing or just like a bunch of woo-woo? So I actually looked into that. And there is a physician out there who had researched and dedicated his career for over 25 years to combine science method with spirit and soul. And he found a way to detect through electrical impulses the energetic body. It's a technique called gas discharge visualization technique, GDV. And it's accepted by the Russian Ministry of Health as a medical technology, and more than 300 doctors, practitioners, and researchers use it worldwide. So he's able to actually detect these ethereal layers on our bodies, which led me down to bioelectricity produced by the human body. And I know I'm going on quite a rant here, but it just led me down these different rabbit holes because I have so many questions. So do we literally have light in our bodies? Can we emit some kind of light that creates something like sparkly holographic skin? So, fact, humans do emit a light. Every living thing does. It's just very hard to detect because it's 1,000 times less intense than the sensitivity of the human eye. And a researcher by the name of Masaki Kobayashi, who is a biomedical photonics specialist in Japan, developed a way to record it with a photosensitive camera. The light seems to fluctuate over time. They say that is linked to our body's metabolism, so the camera might be able to detect medical conditions. There's so much more detail, so I'll share the link on the show notes. It's National Geographic. But the reason I'm getting into all this, I'm getting there. My theory on these people. I feel that through the lens of science and some kind of explanation I can give is that if they were higher beings or they were humans at one point and attained the light body activation, then this would be a symptom, the sparkly skin, these weird powers of knowing things they shouldn't know, being able to disappear and appear at will. So that's all I got for you.
So I think this may in fact be the first episode in which our theories intertwine. But before I go there, I just wanted to say that I am a firm believer in all of us having an aura, and it's very much like the idea of an aura is a very spiritually charged concept, and it's very much backed by science. And similar to what you were saying for the human aura, science has been able to create a way in which it can be photographed. So I think you're definitely onto something there. And I thought that your theory about the aura was interesting because what came to me was, I wonder if in that moment, like, Teresa was tapping into a gift of being able to see auras.
Yeah, I thought and so, that too for a moment. I was like, maybe it was her.
Yeah, like maybe it wasn't like walking around just looking like this. Maybe she was accessing a spiritual gift of some sort. So I'm gonna leave that there. But I thought that was pretty interesting. My theory is that they are guardian angels. And the reason I have come to this theory is because in my research of guardian angels, I see that they tend to appear when you need them most. They tend to appear in times of danger, turmoil, you know, like severe depression. And they're meant to either physically save your life or offer you some sort of, you know, like reprieve, you know, like just give you that push that you need to get through this dark space that you might be in. And I feel like maybe it's a little bit of both for Teresa, as it relates to where she was in this particular story physically, but also mentally after experiencing what she had just experienced. When I was listening to Teresa's story, it reminded me of another guardian angel story that's true and it's documented and science has not been able to explain it away. But in Joplin, Missouri, in, I can't remember the exact year, but it was in the 2010s range, there was a EF5 tornado, which is the strongest on the tornado scale. And it's called the finger of God because it is left up to God whether the people in the path of this tornado survive or not. Like, these EF5 tornadoes are massive, and so they are covering miles and miles of and just creating destruction as they go. So if you're in the path of an EF5 tornado, it's very rarely that you're able to evade in time because they are so massive and they move so quickly. So this EF5 tornado lasted for about 38 minutes as it was completely destroying the town of Joplin, Missouri. People, about 161 people actually ended up losing their lives. What was really miraculous about this particular story is after it had passed, there was a story that began emerging from the town's children who had said that they had seen these butterfly people during different ordeals. So, for instance, there was a family of seven that were in their family home, and while in the home, they had the roof was completely ripped off, and a little boy who was in the family looked up to see one of these butterfly people use their body and completely cover the roof so that way the devastating winds could pass the home. In another instance, miles away, another child was found wrapped tightly inside of a rug, and the part of the home that they were hiding in, the roof was completely lifted off. And so authorities asked the child, like, how did you get in the rug? Like, this, it's heavy, you're small. And the child said that two butterfly people rolled him up in the rug and got him to safety. And then there was another instance that happened, again, miles away from these instances, where a little boy was found in a field. And authorities asked him, like, how did you get so far away from your home? And he said that butterfly people came and lifted him up and brought him out of the path of the tornado. And all throughout the city, there are these children that are talking about these butterfly people and on all of these instances in which they saw butterfly people carrying the souls of the dead up into the sky and then disappearing into the heavens. And authorities and medical examiners and parents are just like completely like bewildered as to the fact that these children who do not know each other, live miles and miles away in different neighborhoods, are recounting a similar story of these so-called butterfly people. So much so that they've created murals all around the city of Joplin, Missouri that showcase these butterfly people. The miracle around it, the unexplainable nature of that is just, it's interesting. And so I saw parallels with Teresa's story because you have this natural disaster in Joplin, Missouri, where these butterfly people show up and save children and people, or at the very least bring peace and then carry them to the heavens. And then you have Teresa's story, who is also, you know, in the midst of a so-called natural disaster, and she's with her 10-month-old son, and she too experiences her own miracle. And so I the way that she describes them almost gives me angelic vibes.
And she does say at the end how she feels they weren't necessarily maybe like her guides, but all these miraculous things that happened surrounding her son.
And I think one of the ways that science was trying to explain it away is they were talking about how, you know,
like a mass hallucination, yeah, or something.
Yes, like, yes. Oh my gosh. It's like, you know, that science is coming to discount my spirituality. But yes, that was one of the things that they were saying, that, you know, like, it was this mass trauma that happened, and these children were just able to pull from the same cords of, you know, to explain away the trauma so that way they can be resilient. And I just, like, nah, that don't make no sense. Like, no, I don't accept.
I don't understand why they have to go immediately to, like, denying claims instead of finding ways to explain the situation. Like, I'm finding that there are scientists and doctors out there that do want to research more of the spirit and give it a chance and not just brush it aside like, oh, that's nonsense. Like,
this is why I feel like what we are doing on this podcast is so important, because it opens a conversation that a lot of people are too afraid to have. Mm-hmm. I think that the more these stories come forward, you know, they not only offer another perspective to the things that we are always experiencing, but they also offer a little bit of hope. There are things that you just can't explain away. As much as you want to find some kind of, like, reasoning behind it, there are certain things that have happened that are unexplainable. And sometimes I think it's meant to be that way.
But these people, I mean, I guess I would think that they were, like, higher beings.
I think that you and I are right on our theory of higher beings. I think that it probably looks a little bit different in our minds. But I think that we've come to an agreement that it is otherworldly, mm-hmm. what has happened to Teresa. And what I was going to say at the beginning, but I was just like, wait till the end, was that Teresa's life, like, after that experience, has never been the same. And it took her down a path that I don't even think she had imagined for her life at that point in her life. And when we were listening to Peter and Ryan's story, you know, like, Peter said something to the effect of, when you have these experiences, it changes everything about the way that you think and what you see as possible. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate, and I feel like I say this every time, I really appreciate that people have decided to come forward and share their stories from their first person perspective, because mm-hmm. I think in all of our stories,
you're not alone.
And in all of our stories, like, people have, the way that people talk about their experiences, like, underscores that these things happen and they pivot you to a new direction. Things that you never even imagined for your life. You have an experience that makes you question the status quo, that makes you question the way that you do things and the way that you think about things. And it propels you in your destiny. Your destiny will always unfold to be wildly different than what you thought about for your life. But 10 years ago, you think I would have been like, oh yeah, I'm going to have a podcast in 10 years talking about supernatural. Never. It was never a thought. But it's all of these things that have happened that have orchestrated this beautiful unfolding of divine timing and destiny. And what we are seeing in Teresa's story is a beautiful unfolding of divine timing and destiny.
Yeah, it is. Thank you so much, Teresa, for sharing this
Thank
one.
Thank you so much, Kazu.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like we ran the gamut on this discussion.
I don't know. There's so much mystery. I will just surrender to the fact that I do not fucking know. So.
And I think I don't know is an answer. You know, we can leave it at that. Again, we are so grateful. And I feel like we say this so much, but because it's so true. You decide to listen to our content. You decide to engage with it. You decide to share it. You decide to leave the kind reviews and the ratings. And you don't have to. And we are just so grateful for the following that we mm-hmm. have, and that it is continuing to grow. So thank you. And if ever you have a story, you or your friend them have a story, or a story that has been passed down from generation to generation that you feel would be an amazing fit for the podcast, please reach out to us on preferably our email, CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com.
And other islands lores. Because I always find that interesting, the similarities that we have in our culture as well.
I completely agree. Thank you again for another wonderful episode. And I hope you guys will come back again next week.
Thank you for listening to Caribbean Mystics Podcast.
If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to share with your family and friends. Like, follow, and subscribe to keep up with all of our spooky Caribbean content.
Do you have a story you'd like to share that took place in the Caribbean? Email us at CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com. That's CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com. Or check the show notes for more info.
Caribbean Mystics is created and hosted by Paulina Creaky and Gabrielle Carrard. Theme song is Folktale Juve Rhythm by Umi Marcano.
This episode of Caribbean Mystics is brought to you by Alexandra Marie Photography for all your life moments. Raw and authentic captures in the unique landscapes of the Virgin Islands. She specializes in weddings, proposals, events, maternity, senior portraits, and family portraits. And the great thing about it is she offers a local discount of $50 off and wedding packages and loyalty discounts for returning clients. She's available to shoot on St. Thomas, St. John, and Water Island. Alexandra Marie Photography. Call 340-690-2062 to book your next shoot or check her website at alexandramariephotography.zenfolio.com. Sage Sanctuary. This one-of-a-kind metaphysical shop is located on St. Thomas in the Yacht Haven Grand Shopping Plaza. They offer a unique collection of esoteric books, tarot and oracle decks, crystals, incense, apothecary herbs, and mystical resources to support the exploration of the sacred self. The sanctuary is home to multiple mediums, channels, and gifted psychics offering a glimpse into the seen and unseen. Akashic record readings, tarot readings, aura photography, dream interpretation, astrology sessions, various modalities of Reiki, energy healing, and more. Additionally, the sanctuary hosts a community calendar of magical events, including weekly and monthly hands-on workshops, expert lectures, guided meditations, sound baths, certification classes, and more. Make sure to call Sage Sanctuary today at 340-775-7253 or visit their website at sagesanctuary.com. That's Sage, S-A-J-E, sanctuary.com.